Blog Talk Radio.
So this is Sunday night at 8 o'clock, which means it is Graphic Policy Radio, where comic books and politics meet. With me is Alana. Welcome, as always.
Hello.
So up tonight, we've got really one kind of interesting topic, and then a whole lot of reviews, which we haven't done for a while. But up first, I think Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Comics, and Frank Miller are kind of the first things on the agenda for those.
Yeah,
that...
I mean, I apparently my attempt to start Occupy Marvel when Marvel had all those layoffs and we found out about their lack of toilets didn't really catch on. But the good news is a lot of comic book creators, including people who write books that aren't explicitly political and who haven't been particularly known for doing political content in their comics before, are all chipping in work to do something called Occupy Comics, which is the fundraising is happening for that on Kickstarter. And it looks like it's going to all be work that's focused around the Occupy Wall Street movement and what's happening right now. So it isn't like it's just going to be reprinting, like, you know, a Swamp Thing story you haven't read. It should be all new material that's almost comics journalism in a way, but I guess maybe comics essays, or I'm not sure exactly how to characterize it, but it seems like it's going to be very much about comics in, like comics talking about, you know, what's happening right now, the Occupy movement. So very exciting. And it's a real fundraiser.
Yeah.
Unlike the Rock-Aware t-shirt that Jay-Z made, which I guess he's now taken off the web, where he was making a Occupy All Streets shirt and then not giving the money to any cause at all. they're saying that this is going to, be a benefit.
I didn't even know about the Jay-Z. I think I caught like a glimpse of it and didn't read the article. So that's news to me. But there's like 25 writers and artists right now. They've come together. They're putting together this anthology that we'll actually probably see print in about late 2012, that they're trying to raise about 10 grand, and they're a little over halfway with 25 days to go on Kickstarter. So, yeah, I mean, the coolest off of this is the fact that they're not making any money. It's all going towards the Occupy movement. And I think they said that they want to donate it to get supplies to help them over the winter, which is something I'm kind of fascinated in seeing how the hell that this is done. Not them giving supplies, but actually the Occupy movement going through the winter. But yeah, I mean, the list of creators that are involved in this is amazing. I mean, you got Charlie Adler, who does Walking Dead, Molly Crabapple, who's been, one of the most outspoken comic people involved when it comes to the movement. Susie Cagle as well, who was actually arrested at Occupy Oakland. Joshua Hale Filikoff, who I think is one of the kind of up-and-coming writers.
J.M. DeMatteis, which is like totally blowing my mind right now.
Yeah, I mean, the list is amazing. Ben Temple Smith, Tim Seeley, like it's just this long list of... So like the talent's just amazing. Joe Keating and there's some cool stuff. I mean, it's like for $10 you can get a PDF digital version of the comic book. But what they'll also do is every comic book that comes out of this movement you'll get, and that's for $10. I mean, that's a pretty solid deal to get digital copies for possibly ever. But yeah, I mean, it's going strong. It's cool that they're doing this, that all the people are grabbing together, or, you know, coming together, doing a good cause and basically donating all their money to a movement. And there's some awesome art that's coming out of it, too.
Oh, definitely.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you checked out, but I mean, that first pic that they have of a kind of like a hippie-ish woman with the flag, I think it's just a cool graphic.
Yeah, and then the pieces that Molly Crabapple has done so far that are on the site, you know, are really wonderful. I know that some of those sketches of Occupy Wall Street protesters were drawn at Zuccotti Park. And I really like her We Are All in This Together piece, and the Vampire Squid prints that she's been doing are really exciting. So
cool.
It's good that we already have some pieces that are, you know, or that are done that'll be part of this that we can look at and get excited about. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the other artists do.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing talent. And then, I have no idea what to expect from these folks. Some have done pseudo political stuff in the past, but for the most part, not really. And even tonight,
that just goes to speak to this as such a movement that like everybody wants to weigh in on it in some way. You know, the people who haven't really been particularly political in their work feel like they have something to say about this also, which is good, right? Because it is giving people the sense that they can speak out about their beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, that's looking at that list, like I would not pick. I'm shocked a lot of these people on here because it's just.
Yeah.
People that I'd normally think of speaking out politically, like I would think some of the more like cartoon movement people that I would expect, or Susie Cagle,
yeah.
I'd expect, you know, Molly Crabapple, I'd expect, but like Ben Templesmith, who's a really cool guy and has done amazing series, you know, 30 Days a Night, Fell, but it's just not someone I would expect to see his name on there. Steve Niles, who does 30 Days a Night, is another one that's like none of their work really, to me, screams politics. It's just a very, very cool movement. And then actually tonight for folks who want to see what all hell breaking loose, Matt Boris is updating on Twitter, I guess, what's going down in Denver.
I thought he was at Occupy Chicago, but maybe I'm getting my Midwestern cities confused because I'm a total New York City jerk.
Let me find, or I could be totally wrong and just not know my
city. Folks should be following him anyway. He does great, great comics journalism and political cartoons, and he's been really active in covering Occupies.
He's throwing up photos of the folks, and I guess there's a crackdown going on tonight. So. Yeah, for people who don't know what the Occupy movement is, do you want to explain to them?
Okay.
I know. I'm not.
I know. This is a big picture, high level. Some folks in New York came together to say that they were going to occupy Wall Street. Ended up getting pushed over to a park space near Wall Street, collectively, to as a way of expressing the mass cultural anger that people are feeling towards the imbalance in power in America right now, especially as regards to the banks and the banking industry. And one of the really powerful messages that has sort of come from that has been, we are the 99%, meaning we are the 99% of Americans who have been suffering in the current economic system and who are supporting, like, as our money and our work has supported the top 1%, who are essentially taking the resources that we create and keeping them to themselves, and 1% of the of Americans control the majority of our money and the seat of all of our power, and it's incredibly unjust. And because people are able to, it's such a broad-based movement, it isn't like about one particular person or just one thing. Everybody is able to bring their own personal experiences to it. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many folks from around the country who are not part of the usual suspects of protesting have gotten involved. One of the projects that I worked on myself is called Occupy the Boardroom, which has enabled over 7,000, probably 8,000 people by now, to send messages to bank CEOs, telling them their stories of how they struggled with the foreclosure crisis, with predatory lending, with getting laid off, like people who are like, you know, low-level staff at banks getting laid off, all the people who are running the banks are getting massive bonuses like never before. And just reading the stories that people share about their own lives is incredibly powerful. I think this is really giving people, a lot of people, their voice back in a way that they haven't felt like they've had, to talk about economic injustice and the things that they're going through right now. And it's definitely changing the political debate. I mean, before Occupy Wall Street, all you heard about on TV was like, the austerity fight and how we need to cut the budget and cut the deficit. And now we're talking about job creation and putting the priorities back on like helping people and then fighting bank corruption and then restructuring our tax base to tax the rich their fair share. So it has definitely changed the conversation in the media and really impacted how a lot of politicians are trying to work right now. And almost more importantly, it's really bringing Americans out to a public sphere of protest that they haven't been in for a very long time. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, sounds good to me. very good explanation. So the reason I kind of wanted you to sum it up was because there's been one creator who went on a rant on Saturday, around Saturday, might have been Friday, I think it was Saturday, slamming the actual Occupy movement in a very odd and, I don't even know, just an odd screed against it, which half of it doesn't even make sense. Frank Miller. Yeah, Frank Miller, who seems to be now the conservative poster boy for comic books, decided to rant on his blog about Occupy Wall Street, and I probably should just read the whole damn thing. So in his post called Anarchy, he goes on to say, everybody's been too damn polite about this nonsense. The Occupy movement, whether it's displaying itself on Wall Street or in the streets of Oakland, which has, with unspeakable cowardice, embraced it, is anything but an exercise of our blessed First Amendment. Occupy is nothing but a pack of louts, thieves, and rapists, an unruly mob fed by Woodstock-era nostalgia and putrid false righteousness. These clowns can do nothing but harm America. Occupy is nothing short of a clumsy, poorly expressed attempt at anarchy to the extent that the movement, some movement, except if the word bowel is attached, which I actually thought was kind of funny, it's anything more than an ugly fashion statement by a bunch of iPhone, iPad-wielding, spoiled brats who should stop nothing or stop getting in the way of working people and finding jobs themselves. This is no popular uprising. It's garbage, and goodness knows they're spewing their garbage both politically and physically, every which way they can find. Wake up, pond scum. America's at war against a ruthless enemy. Maybe between bouts of self-pity and the other tasty tidbits of narcissism, you've been served up on your sheltered, comfy little worlds. You've heard terms like Al-Qaeda and Islamicism. And this enemy of mine, not of yours, apparently, must be getting dark chuckle, if not an outright horse laugh, out of your vain, childish, self-destructive spectacle. In the name of DC, go home to your parents, you losers. Go back to your mama's basement and play with your Lords of Warcraft. Or better yet, list for the real thing. Maybe our military could whip some of you into shape. They might not let you babies keep your iPhones, though. Try to soldier on, schmucks. Frank Miller.
Yeah, it's completely incoherent. I'm not saying that he doesn't say things in it that many people agree with, although a minority, since most people, polling shows most people do agree with Occupy Wall Street. But the way it's written so incoherently, like, I kind of feel bad making fun of him because it's like making fun of this, like, crazy old person who, like, doesn't have their head on straight anymore. And I know that there are a lot of folks who, you know, Frank Miller's been, like, a racist fascist for, like, a long time, and I'm not saying that every time an older, you know, person who is racist and fascist says something crazy, then that's just because they're old. But his level of incoherence, I just think he's, like, kind of lost it,
And that's kind of my reading of it. I mean, I kind of wrote a retort where I took the breakdown and somewhat made fun of it.
Oh, yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, but that's what it comes off to me, is just, like, the guy that's completely lost his mind. I mean, it doesn't even make sense where he's talking about – it starts off talking about the movement itself, and it clearly – I don't think he gets the movement.
No.
Because, you know, at one point he's describing it as this one single-voiced thing, and it's anything but a single-voiced thing. And then he just goes on to this rant about Al-Qaeda and the war on terror, and I'm just like, one has nothing to do with the other.
I loved that you said, oh, we're going up against a big enemy. You mean Wall Street? No, wait, you're not talking about that. Like, that was pretty right on. Joe Macare from AKA Exile in Flyville on Twitter had a great line, which was fondly remembering all those people who defended Frank Miller's post 9/11 embrace of neoconservatism 10 years ago. I guess it was easier to defend Frank Miller for 10 years because his bile was only directed towards brown people. And I said, oh, totally. That's totally right on. You know, it's been there. This isn't news. This shouldn't be news to anybody, you know?
No, I mean, but the thing is, like, it comes out of nowhere. It was just, I made the comment, was like, it really feels like someone who had a crappy day or was drinking too much was in front of his computer and just types.
Well, yeah, although the politics that it represents, you know, are consistent with what he's said for like a long time now, you know, but it is written like a crazy incoherent person.
Yeah, I mean, like, this whole thing of just like everyone's been too damn polite, it's just like, is that to unto itself show?
I like how you, your response to that was posting a video of the police rioting and beating up people in Oakland. I'm like, yeah, they're so polite, you know.
I mean, yeah, because, you know, mayors are shipping in police from other areas to beat the crap out of these protesters. I mean, last I checked, people weren't doing this for the Tea Party when they were doing a hell of a lot worse.
Bringing guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, bringing guns to protests with politicians and shit, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
yeah, they're crazy. But it's been really good to see the response that a lot of folks have had on the internet to him, you know. I know that some folks have had some questions about Eric Larson's politics himself, but he's had some very articulate things in response to Frank Miller, you know, saying, what do you mean it's incoherent? It's really clear people are against the banks, like, that the rich should pay their fair share. Like, what are you talking about? You know, I thought he had a nice comment on there, and I saw some good things from other writers as well, so.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of people that have come out against it has been impressive. I mean, Eric Larson just was, like, on a Twitter roll yesterday, beating back trolls, like taking him on. Some of them were really, really funny. I think my favorite was, come on, guys, let's focus on what's important. What does Frank Miller think of Red Hulk, which was Joe King, his response. And then a lot of people picked up about the enlisting thing where Frank Miller, like one of his idols is clearly Will Eisner, who enlisted for the Army, and Miller's done no such thing.
Right.
In his defense, there wasn't really much to enlist for throughout his life, but, you know, whatever. But, I mean, still, it's just, yeah, it was news. It was interesting. But I think, again, it kind of brings up that comic books is a very apolitical beast. I think even from the beginning, it was a political beast. I mean, that was kind of always my theory and the thing is that even the earliest strips when comics were just starting was usually about class and that you had, you know, Tin Can Alley, those type of stuff was as much entertainment, but it was also about the poor, the lower class, you know, sticking it to the upper class, very much almost a Occupy Wall Street vibe to it. And that it really was artists who were commenting about the society of the times. So it's just kind of interesting. All like
it's,
you know,
baked into the
100
medium.
Years
and
later.
Of course, anything that whereas, you know, as people dealing with conflicts and fighting and power is going to have, you know, political messages in it. And heck, I mean, Frank Miller had Reagan as the bad guy in The Dark Knight Returns. So it's like, it's always been in there, you know, it's always been in there. But, it's nice to also see people speak less obliquely and more directly.
Yeah, it's funny that Miller is like, I never, yeah, his stuff always like embraced and was very pro vigilante. But so were comics as a whole, like just in general, the idea of a superhero going out and taking the law into their own hand is I've never really thought of his stuff in a right wing sense until like, no, the last decade or so when it kind of really clicked, and maybe that was just me being unaware, but, you know, when you read his earlier stuff, Daredevil, Batman, all that, like, I don't know why, it just never crossed my mind in a...
Well, he always bashed hippies. That was always a recurring theme. But it's true that when I first read The Dark Knight Returns, while it had, like, a lot of hippie bashing, and it totally bashed restorative justice or the idea that, like, some criminals need help and there are crazy and like I'm sorry, like just because you want to see criminals getting treated doesn't mean you think they should be able to break out of Arkham Asylum. Like that's not the same thing. You know, he didn't have that same level of extreme sort of fascism. But you know, 300 was incredibly racist. It's all been sort of in there at least more explicitly for the past 10 years.
Yeah, I mean it seems to be like a general slide over the last definitely in the last 10 years.
That's why I think he's going crazy. I think there's a symptom of going crazy.
Yes. I wouldn't be shocked. I really would not be surprised. If you definitely look at his photos of the last 10 years, he looks like something's up. he just doesn't look healthy
well,
in general.
Well, saying that Frank Miller can't benefit from any of those social services that he's condemning as being fruity and liberal. I would love to send a social worker to go and speak with him, you know?
It's, you know, I was kind of going back and watching this weekend some of him talking about Holy Terror at, I want to say, San Diego. And even then, it was just, it was a rant. And I mean, he's slurring his words and something was up. It just didn't seem normal. But yeah, I mean, it's sad because, I mean, he's such an icon.
Have any of the other conservative comic people, like Rob Liefeld, have they commented on any of this at all?
Good question. I haven't seen it.
Okay. They're probably smart enough to keep quiet, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, most of them generally, you know, I, even like, saying you're against something's fine, as long as it's a coherent argument. Like, I've got no problem if someone doesn't like Occupy Wall Street. The thing that bothers me about Miller's rant was it just makes no sense.
Right.
It's the line, I think what one person said was, like, there's a line from Billy Madison where it was like, at no point did you address the question, you know, we're all dumber for having listened to you.
Yes. Yes, it definitely sounds familiar.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way it felt after reading that. Yeah, I mean, it's just sad, too. And I kind of want to go back and read his earlier stuff to see if they're, like, what the hints are. But yeah, because, I mean, the things that I remember was Reagan being one of the big bad guys for Dark Knight. And, yeah. He was an outright bad guy, so it's interesting. But yeah, but I mean, it's also impressive that you see a whole bunch of people speaking out against and calling out basically the.
Obviously, he's not the considered like the genius that he used to be considered, but it is still like, you know, people are calling out a comics legend, so that is pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually funny.
A downward spiral.
So someone took his entire rant and put it into the script of Batman Year One. So it's an entire page. Bleed and Cole has it up. It's this one page of Batman Year One. It's just, I mean, it's, to say it fits is it's too perfect.
Can we talk about X-Men before my head explodes thinking about Frank Miller's, like,
absolutely.
Brain?
Yes,
oh,
yes.
God.
Let's go from...
Let's talk about smart comics.
and speaking of comics that are very political, the new X-Men, Reed Genesis. Let's move on to that, because I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say about it.
You know, I need to read, I just realized this, I haven't sat down yet to read Spencer Ackerman's piece, I think, that deals with Israel-Palestine issues with regards to... in like APEC and all that other stuff with regards to X-Men and Utopia and everything else. I gotta take a look at that. He always has smart things to say. I'm really enjoying this storyline, and I really love the writers that they have working on it. And I finally got my hands on a copy of Wolverine and the X-Men. It had been out, not at the stores, last week when I tried to get it, all sold out. And I think it's great, and I'm really uncomfortable with the treatment of Toad in the book, but I think that's supposed to be problematic, and I'm hoping that they address, like, you know, it's not okay to treat janitorial staff like shit, you know? Like, that's, I feel like hopefully people are supposed to read that as being like, oh, that's inappropriate. I liked the first issues of both of them, and I'm a sucker for the sort of diagram icon graphics that each book had at the back of it showing the breakdown of the teams. The sort of a compulsive collector of symbols in me was like, oh, I'm going to make a list of all these little... Because they have this thing on the back page of both of the books where they have like a symbol they've invented for every one of the primary characters in those books and shows you how the teams are broken down and things like that. That was quite cute. And, you know, who doesn't want to read Wolverine dealing with the Board of Regents?
That could have been one of the funniest comics I've read all year. I mean, that Wolverine and the X-Men number one, I was laughing throughout. I mean, that and Avengers Spider-Man this week were two of the funniest things I've read in the longest time. just because of them trying to pitch everything to the Board of Regents to get accredited. And it's all those questions that folks have had over the years of, like, you know, your school gets attacked every other week. You know, how is this safe for kids? You have all this strange technology. How the hell is this all working so seamlessly? Like, it's all just kind of brought out in front, being like, yeah, we've been kind of having fun with that. It's just, oh, it's too funny. The toad scenes, I kind of start feeling bad for them. Like,
oh, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. They're treating him like shit. He's really sad. I mean, he's a bad guy, but, like, they're treating him like he's subhuman.
Yeah, I mean, it started off with him, like, having to beg to get taken to Westchester. And then from there, it was like, I mean, he threw it out there. He's just like, I will do anything. I'll even be the janitor. And Wolverine's like, oh, really? Done. Because he just didn't want him to begin with.
Right.
But I have a feeling there's going to be a point, like, there will be an upcoming episode of, like, Toad steps up and saves the school or something of that nature. But
mm-hmm.
to me, it was like, I felt bad for him, but at the same time, it was like...
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, workers shouldn't have to save the school in order to be, like, not treated like they're subhuman. You
sure.
know? It just really was, like, oof, really uncomfortable, but I think it was supposed to be uncomfortable. I hope I'm reading that right. I loved reading the list of classes that were offered in the back.
Yes.
Kitty Pryde's ethics class, which is, like, everything Emma Frost told you was wrong. It was wonderful.
And the other thing with Toad is, you know, you remind me of Milton from Office Space, where he uh-huh. just kept on mumbling of, like, you know, you took my stapler, I didn't get my paycheck. It was just that really very similar character, and I don't know why, like, it just was really funny to me.
Yeah.
But overall, like, you know, for that, it was great direction. And then Uncanny, I think, is finally coming back to stuff that's been brought, that, like, was brought up in issue 500 and just never really addressed, between the Dreaming Celestial, the fact that these folks are moving to an island, that they all have powers that could probably take over a country. You know, what do you consider them? Are they a rogue state? Are they a nation to themselves? Like, how do you deal with it? Like, all those questions are finally being brought up and addressed
yep.
somehow.
Which
is cool. I mean, we kind of talked, it's like, to me, the second half where they fought Sinister wasn't as exciting for me. But that first half where, like, Scott's just laying it out, being like, yeah, we will show everyone why they shouldn't mess with us, is a hell of a statement.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely.
No, I agree that everything dealing, like, it was great seeing the Dreaming Celestial, you know, fit into the story after all this time, and having them talk about the role that they play on the greater political stage. Although, as a communications expert, I really don't think they should call it the Extinction Team. I think that's really poor marketing, and they should call back that mutant communications guru they had on a while back, who was trying to work on Magneto's public image, because that's just the last thing you want to call a team. But no, I think the comic was really serious and fun and interesting all at the same time. I do think it established Sinister as being interesting and scary, but it just wasn't as good as the, you know, Scott laying everything out part at the beginning of the comic. That's fine, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good start. And yeah, I mean, it was kind of the one thing that was missing was that the PR person wasn't there, where he's the whole time where he's talking about, like, you are the A-team, you're the Extinction Team. I'm like, why the hell are you calling your team this? Like, this makes no sense if you're trying to set up, like, a world stage and not come off as menacing. Like, that's probably not the way to go about it. But as you said, like, just bad marketing, really bad marketing on his part.
I feel like there's a lot of characters who should be helping and standing with Scott who aren't. I don't have a name immediately to pull out of my head on this, but I felt like it feels like there's more people who should be standing and guiding him in his inner circle who aren't really there.
Well, that was kind of the fascinating thing that got brought up, is, like, Scott's inner circle now is all villains, all former villains.
Yeah.
You've got Namor.
Oh, I love how that was handled. That was
like Namor, Emma Frost, Magneto. This is as Inner Circle. It's just
magic. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Like, this isn't a good team to really, or this isn't a good group of people I really want to listen to. It's just, it's kind of fascinating. And then you have Wolverine's circle, which is like Beast, Iceman, Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, I mean, that's...
You know, here's an example. I could totally see Forge. I don't know if he did. I could totally see Forge taking Cyclops' side on this, and he would be someone who would speak from a point of moral authority and would be a useful voice to have, you know. I mean, maybe he's dead, and I can't keep track, but...
He kind of just fell off the map. He was part of an Astonishing X-Men, Warren Ellis arc, how many issues ago? Probably like a year ago. And it had to deal with like these Chinese mutants. And Forge wound up like flipping out and was sort of the villain in it. And then disappeared and hasn't been around since.
Oh.
Which seems like a really odd thing. Since I would love to see him come back and be part of like the science group.
Right. That's true. Yeah,
like the way he does stuff.
Madison Jeffries is almost like a fill-in for Forge. I mean...
Yep, yeah. I mean, it is really similar characters, yeah. They're like, all of them... It'd be fun to come back and have Forge come back and be like, who the hell are these people? This is what I used to do.
Right.
And I also
feel like he's someone who could really speak, like, as a, you know, with a certain amount of moral authority that, with Cyclops, who, like, could use that right now. So...
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But I don't, and that's just the first name off the top of my head who I thought of. I'm sure you could name some other folks as well.
I mean, the big one is clearly Storm's going to be that role. Where he pulled her aside and was just like, I need you. Because look at who the hell I'm surrounded by. Like, I need you to, one, be that positive force out of everything. Because she's always been that positive force. And then she kind of threw it back and was like, no, you need me because I'm the head of state. I give you some credibility in that department. And he's just like, yeah, there's that too.
You know, they say often, like, if you find yourself surrounded with all the people who you think are bad, like, then maybe you're not necessarily in the right. But I don't know if I believe that. But it should make Scott question things.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the thing is, like, over the years, how he got to this part. I mean, he used to be, like, the moral, upstanding person out of everyone. And he was the guy who was just, we won't kill, we won't, we'll be more reactionary, we won't be interventionist at all. Like, he was always kind of that moral character out of everyone. And it's just been this sly over, like, the, you know, it's picked up, but definitely over the last decade that he kind of headed to that direction of, like, we will kick ass, we will go out and do a kill team. It's just been a very interesting...
And his story's been completely believable. Like, I'm totally there with... it isn't like it's just got ginned up or cooked up.
No, I mean, it makes sense. Like, this is a guy who was always the leader of the X-Men. The X-Men at one point basically became the de facto leadership for the entire mutant race. So therefore Cyclops is really the de facto leader of the entire mutant race. They get decimated and are now endangered. So as the leader of everyone, he's now got the weight on his shoulders that he needs to protect everyone. And then everything kicks up where hate starts, you know, the hate goes into overtime. There's brutal killing of kids. You know, there's basically racist elements that are going out lynching mutants all over the place. So his slide is completely believable. Like, you know, I same time trying to put myself in his shoes and being like, yeah, would I make those same decisions? And I can't think of there's anything that he's done that I probably wouldn't have done myself.
I think you're the person who made me understand, like, Scott was been raised with mutants all the time.
Yep.
You know, Logan grew up for hundred years with, like, just humans.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other, is just, like, you think about that, was he was you know, that his time with humans was really short. Like, he was in a orphanage not long before he was basically adopted by Xavier, depending on, like, what origin you want to read. And then you've got Logan, who kind of goes back and forth between, like, I mean, it makes sense out of the two of them is that Logan is the feral of the two characters, where he's kind of the wild man, straight-up killer, but the whole his struggle has always been wanting to be human. And trying to fight that animal side and trying to be a normal person who's not just a killing machine. And that's always been his struggle. Yep. And I think that's part of him with the school is trying to fit that role where he's like, I can be yep. more than what I was trained.
And I think what you just said is a perfect rebuttal to anybody who thinks that the reason why Wolverine is leading up the school book is because Wolverine is like really popular and boys like him. It's, you know, I think that's a bonus. Like, you've just given exact, like, you know, in-story serious justification for why it's him that I completely buy. I still don't think he should be headmaster. That's ridiculous. He can still, like, be the leader without being the headmaster. He has no skills in that area whatsoever. But
and that was kind of addressed in the first issue where it's like he admits that he sort of has no skills.
And he's never been in school. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I don't know what parent is going to send their kids to that. You know.
And yeah, Kitty Pryde and both Beasts were just like, yeah, his name might be up there, but in reality, we're the ones really running everything. I mean, it just comes down to is like, Logan was raised as a killing machine. He does not want the next generation of mutants to be a killing machine, so therefore he split and wants to give them sort of a school life, a normal life, and not put them out in the front lines. Like, it totally makes sense as to the split and why he did what he did.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a breaking point where he's just like, you know what, enough is enough. I really don't feel like seeing more kids die and, you know, kids need to be kids. And it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that makes sense. Their fight as a big, giant, sentinel death machine is bearing down on them might not make complete sense, but the story as a whole is it's like a natural progression. And it seemed
yeah.
to, like, really kick off with Edie from Generation Hope and her slide and her winding up killing people. It seems to kind of like that was the part where it like really broke Logan because he does have a habit of like of bringing in a small kid and trying to teach them and be not really a sidekick, but he's almost like a I don't want to say a father figure, but you know, definitely a mentor or older brother type. Mm-hmm. And she filled that latest role. She wound up killing someone and completely melted down. And to me, that was like the ultimate, that was the breakdown of him where he's just like, you know, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. These kids need to live a normal life.
Yeah.
So to me, yeah, it makes complete sense. As a whole, like,
how the hell
yeah.
is Astonishing and like all these other random like books supposed to fit in with this? Like Legacy. I don't even know what Legacy is. Like, I don't get how does that relate to the big meta story?
So let's go with the easy one. So New Mutants seems to be more of the out and about team that's going to deal with the mutant issues. Like their first mission is going to be taking out Blink, who came back during the whole Necrotia storyline, and she's just been out and about, so the team's going to get sent off to go deal with her. Legacy, I'm not quite sure. Like, their horrible space line or story arc just ended this week, and they wound up back on Earth, and, like, the Legacy's point up to this was getting Havoc, Polaris, and Rachel Summers back to Earth. That was the whole point
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it seems like I would never bother to read that story, but I'm glad that those characters are back on Earth. I just,
yeah.
You know, I don't know, like, it doesn't mean I have to read it.
And no, you don't have to read it. Like, the story as a whole was, I don't think, very good. And it definitely, the ending, you could see the point where the writer's just like, yeah, I really have no idea how the hell I'm going to do this. Oh, let's just create, like, a wormhole and suck them through. And it's like, really? This is your solution?
Yeah, it's like storytelling that's used to deliver things from point A to point B, but that has no real storytelling to it. It seems sort of ambiguous.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, I kind of sat there and I was like, yeah, this is not one of the good storylines. There's a whole, like, that team. I have no idea what the hell they're going to be doing with it. X-Factor seems like it's still going to be X-Factor, but Havoc joins.
Yeah.
Generation Hope, I think, is probably still similar to what we've seen.
Yeah, and also that book makes sense with relation to the others.
Yeah. And then, let's see, what else is there? Is that everything? Oh, then there's Uncanny X-Force, which at this point I have no idea what the hell's going to go on because that storyline hasn't concluded yet. And they're pulling in all kinds of, like, Age of Apocalypse stuff, and it's up in the air. I really have no idea what the hell to expect with that series.
Mm-hmm.
And
I just
that,
can't keep track of, like, what does Legacy mean? Is that, like, the Chris Claremont, like, if...
Saved? So, Legacy was the interesting... It was an interesting concept when it first started, was the idea was Xavier had did these horrible things, that he really wasn't the altruistic good guy that everyone thought he was, that, yeah, maybe his goals were noble. He himself was kind of a shithead. And that he just went on this journey where he was going to go and kind of deal with some of the stuff in the past that's occurred that, you know, were crazy. Like, part of it was him dealing with the Acolytes were still around and what went down with Magneto in the past and Exodus in the past. And it really was kind of like a journey through old school history. And then it just kind of went off this rails where Rogue took the team and then it turned into her and like this kind of ragtag team where it was sort of,
I mean, basically her, like everything you're saying just is like, why would I want to read that? You know, it just,
well, for me, I thought it was cool. Yeah. I mean, but it was all storylines that I remember reading 20 years ago. And as for that, I was just like, oh, this is really cool in that you get to see kind of what the ramifications of some of this stuff was. Because there was a lot that was left out there, and it wasn't supposed to be like them fighting all the time. It was more Xavier going through and dealing, almost like a Kane from Kung Fu sort of thing, where he's just dealing with all the crap that he's done in the past and trying to right some of these wrongs. So it really was for the hardcore fans and really the only the hardcore fans. But I think the part of the problem was like with Legacy was it, as much as that's what its goal was and its point was, then it went off the rails. Then it turned into like Rogue leading this future team of all these people who are going to be coming up next. And then you had all these events going on between Messiah War, Messiah Complex, and Necrotia, and I don't even know what the hell else that just like drove the storyline, and it never kind of got back to what it was supposed to be. It was, yeah, so it, who knows what they're going to do with now. Like, it, and we discussed, I think, one time before, was like with Astonishing, what's the point?
Yeah, Well, you know, at least they still have X-Factor, which is strong. Although I don't know if it's as strong as it was, but I'm still definitely reading it. And Uncanny, which is wonderful, and Wolverine and the X-Men, which is wonderful. So, you know, I feel good about the series overall. But it just seems like there's a lot of fat to trim away.
Yes,
like
definitely.
How many does the world need at one time? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would dump.
Want to talk about Batwoman and Batgirl?
Yeah. Did you read this week's?
I did.
What did you think?
Batwoman, like, doesn't even need to. If Batwoman didn't have any text or plot, like, I wouldn't care. I mean, it's better to have than not. But the artist is so gorgeous. It just exists on its own. I would just, like, wrap my apartment with those pictures on every single wall. There were some particularly beautiful layouts in this issue. So, and you know what? The stories aren't as good as they were when Rocco was writing it. That was just, you know, some of the greatest stuff ever. But the book is so gorgeous. You have to buy it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Batwoman, I said in my review, like, it's all about the art. I mean, the beginning of the story, I couldn't tell. Like, I was utterly confused as to what the hell was going on. With her drowning is what I just chalked it up to, was her drowning.
Well, it's supposed to be like, I think it's supposed to be like her struggle through her mind is like the drowning sort of tries to make her feel like her crazy sister, you know?
Yeah, and that's the way I took it. But at the same time, I was like, is there more than that? I'm not quite sure. But the art is like amazing. I mean, it was similar to Nightly News for me in that the way the art is and the layouts, it makes me rethink what a comic could be and how it should look and how it should tell a story and how it should be laid out. Like, I can't think of anything else that's even close to what this series is. At least just
yeah.
art.
Yeah.
Beyond unique, beyond gorgeous. For that alone, I think it's a buy.
Yeah, agreed. What did you think about Batgirl?
It was okay. It wasn't as solid, I think, as like the first issue. I mean, it was clearly the point of this issue was to get her to interact with Nightwing and establish where that is in the current continuity. I mean, my issue with the first three ones as a whole is that it seems to be beating it over our head that she had this traumatic thing going on and that it was a miracle for her to be standing and walking now. And it's just like, okay, we get it. Let's move on. Like, you're either going to address... to me, the thing is just they haven't addressed how it went about and happened. So it's like, do you want to mention this? Like, the first issue was just like, okay, she's standing, and it's like one page, and that's it, in a really small brief text, and it's kind of like they wanted to get away from it. And then the second and third issues kind of beating it over the head of like, she's walking now. It's like, which is it? You either want us to forget that she was in a wheelchair, or you want to embrace it and go in full head, and I can't figure out which it is.
You know, I really hated the whole it was a miracle and like let's not talk about it thing at first. But at least with this issue, they tried to turn it into a theme, right? So this whole miracles thing as being a theme in the book—that's at least a noble attempt at having it made some significance. I still think it's a bad idea, but I was like, okay, at least you're trying. I this book was such a mixed bag. Like, there were moments in it that I thought were really strong, like the panel where she's thinking about the things she'd like to tell her dad. And then doesn't say those things. But the whole, like, let's have a fight with Dick so I can demonstrate that I don't need him, it just seemed really, really immature for a woman her age to, like, just do that. And it wasn't, like, a fun fight. Like, it began as a fun fight, and then it became, like, I'm going to kick your ass because I want you to leave me alone. And it's like, that's not how adults deal with their problems, I thought. I know it's a comic book, but still, I mean. I don't know, Mirror as a villain... I like the character concept, don't like the execution, really. I just know that, like, you know, this is one of my favorite comic book artists, like, writers, you guys. Like, Gail Simone is, like, one of my favorites that who's currently working. And, yeah, she can do better, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to this issue itself, I think my thing is, like, the fight is kind of flirtatious. And then there's a point of it's like, all right, there's just too much of this. And actually, I think the whole interaction brought up more issues because if Batman, Batgirl, and all that stuff is supposed to be 5 years from Justice League. So it's established that Batman, Justice League, has probably been around for a couple of years. So let's say it's even like 7, 8 years at that point. So it's been 10 years since Batman really started. Where the hell is Dick Grayson kind of fit into that? Because he made a comment of, like, them growing up, and Grayson's probably, what, his mid-20s or early 20s, somewhere around there. If that's the fact, I mean, if you do the math, like, none of it adds up. It makes no sense.
No. But and it tries to make it make sense. I'd almost wish it didn't try because it makes the narrative less interesting when they're just trying to make it make sense. It's like, just give up already, you know?
Yeah. I mean...
With this third book, it was just really like, if you feel that you want to, if the whole point of the New 52 is to make something that'll be compelling to brand new readers, then you don't spend issue 3 trying to explain Dick and Barbara's relationship, which you only care about if you're people who already care about the comics.
Yes. And you're the only one you're going to know if you really care about the comics. I mean, I kind of liked where Dick kept on saying, like, oh, there's something about redheads. Like, I kind of laughed at that. Yeah. But at the same time, like, unless you've really read the characters, known the characters for a long time, you probably won't even know that there was what was going on between them and their relationship and all that. Like, it's just, to me, not something for a third issue. It should still be focused on Barbara and her father, and that's it. And the other, I mean, like, you take in Batman and Robin, which is solid writing, but Robin, Damian's, like, I think they mentioned that he's 10 or 12, which means that Batman fathered him before he was Batman.
That's true, though, right? Didn't he father him while he was in training to be Batman? And
but even
like,
then...
Oh, yeah, I'll go...
Yeah, but even then, like, that timing doesn't make quite sense, because if he's 12... that means he was training for how many years, and, like, what point did this happen? It gets even murkier. Like,
this is just the wrong thing to care about, you know? And they're just leading us down a trail of caring about things that aren't important to people, really.
Yeah.
Except for hardcore fans.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing for me, is, like, if the New 52 is about moving on, starting over, and being accessible for new readers... this wasn't. Like, this is delving into continuity that's been around for decades that people don't necessarily need to know. But then again, maybe the reading people that, you know, people that are going to really be into Batgirl, they assume are going to be hardcore fans. But as a whole, like, it just didn't seem to be in the right direction of what they should be going. But yeah. It was interesting, though. Like, it's one where I didn't quite... It hasn't hit the point where I'm just like, I'm giving up on this, but it's going that way.
Right.
I find myself enjoying the issues less and less, for at least that series, with each issue.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, but... Yeah, I mean, there's just something that's not clicking for me.
I agree.
So did you get a chance to read Pigs?
I did.
Second and third issue, or just second issue, or just third issue?
Second and third issue of Pigs. Yeah, I'm up to date on Pigs.
What did you think?
Every now and then, I feel like it's brutal for the sake of trying to be brutal. I felt that more in this issue than in others, but it is a unique world. It's interesting. I want to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I mean, that... To me, that
but
first
the first issue
was
sort of the most intriguing, though, really.
Yeah, and to say that first issue had me hooked is an understatement. Like, that last panel of the first issue, I mean, can we spoil it at this point? It's been 3 months. Should I say spoiler?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess right, so. Spoiler alert, cover your ears if you plan on reading Pigs in Half.
Yeah, you could do the la, 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 la. So the last panel of the first issue is... you know, them interrogating a KGB spy who clearly has kidnapped the president, and they put the hand out in front of the spy being like, where the hell is the rest of the president? So the next two issues have started that lead up as to how we got to that point, filling in the backstory as to who the hell these people are and what their history is. And it's interesting. Like, it's definitely... brutal, and I mean, to me, it fits. Like, if you're talking Russian KGB hardcore folks, I mean, the Russians are notorious for doing messed up stuff in training. So all of it makes sense, but it's brutal. I mean, there's some really messed up stuff there. Like, I mean, I don't know how much you know about, like, the Spetsnaz and the Russian anti-terrorism. Is like, it's the type of thing of, like, okay, we want you to do hand-to-hand fighting, but we want you to experience it with a broken arm so you know what it feels like to fight with a broken arm and can still fight with a broken arm. So they'll break your arm and then expect you to still fight. Like, that's just the way they do it. Of like, oh, we want you to deal with learning how to, you know, what it feels like to be shot. We're going to shoot you or stab you. Like, they're hardcore.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess that does sort of give it more of an excuse for some of the things I thought were gratuitous.
Yeah, so it's like it is gratuitous. Don't disagree with that, all of that, but it makes sense for, like, if this is an elite group of Russian KGB sleeper cell, whatever you want to call them, like, there are going to be some messed up people as far as their training. Like, that second issue is pretty much all torture. And this third one, like, it's interesting. Is I'm going, you know, leading up to it, being like, what's the code that they're going after? How is a U.S. senator involved? Like, it's cool. Like, this could be something I would see and be like, this could be a really cool movie.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, it's definitely not what I thought it would be. I'm not saying I dislike it, but it hasn't gone in the direction I expected it to go.
Right. I mean, I'm definitely going to, you know, keep reading the book, and folks should check it out. It's by Image.
Yeah, I mean, I got to read it just because I want to figure out how the hell that last, you know, how we get to that last panel of that first issue.
Yeah,
At that point, I'm not giving up. But it's interesting. Like, I always thought it was a limited series, and I think it's an ongoing series. So, you know, where they're going, like, I... no idea. Like, limited series makes sense. It's just, it's going to be who these folks are, what their training is, how they got to that ending. And maybe that's what the first arc is, but where do you go after that? I have no idea. Like, maybe it's bringing down the rest of the team. Maybe it's getting them back. Like, I don't know. And, like, I'm a sucker for that type of series, so I can't wait.
Yeah. No, it's definitely exciting, and it's not like anything else that I see out there.
Yeah, there's nothing I think I can even think of comparing it to. What else have you been reading that might be of note?
Definitely still reading Journey into Mystery, but I have not yet read this month. I definitely enjoyed last month's a great deal, and I've been enjoying that series.
I'm going to be interested in seeing what you think of this month's, because it definitely deals a lot with what happened post-Fear Itself.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't been reading Fear Itself stuff other than that
right.
book, so my perception of that is kind of stunted.
So I'm going to be fascinated to see how you feel, because there's like a new status quo as far as leadership in Asgard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, if not having read Fear Itself, how you're going to take it. So maybe there'll be something to discuss next show.
Yep.
What else?
Oh, and World War III Comics has a new graphic novel compendium thing coming out next week. I got an advanced copy from a friend of mine who's writing in it, Ethan Heitner, and we might have him on the show next week to talk about it.
Yeah, so what is this? World War III Comics? I've never heard of it until you brought it up.
Oh, wow. They're like the leading, I would say, like the leading like leftist leftist comic book ever, I guess. It's an anthology of pieces by comics journalists from around the world and comic writers, and definitely has a lot of nonfiction comics in it, but also comics essays, and it's a really serious content, you know. And I haven't been reading it regularly, but there are a lot of artists who I respect who do work for it. And this new one has coverage of the Wisconsin protests from this past winter and Tahrir Square and everything else happening in Egypt. My friend Ethan actually lived in Egypt for a number of years working for a newspaper there, so he's particularly well qualified to do some comics journalism on that subject.
Huh. Yeah, I've never heard of it until you brought it up, so I'm excited. Like, I think it'll be very cool to check it out.
Very cool.
That's definitely one I'm going to have to see. Hopefully I can find it somewhere here near me.
Yeah, I'm sure you can get it at any of the sort of political bookstores, probably, as well as some of the comics bookstores. And do you have any final recommendations for the week?
Yeah, there's a lot out this week. So it's cool. I can plug, and we probably should do plugs, at least thank yous for the various companies that are hooking us up. For Image... like, Image has got so much coming out. I don't know if it's next week or the week after, but 27, Second Set number 3 is coming out, and I'm a huge fan of the series. For IDW, like, I'm a sucker for Transformers. I think it's been fantastic. Boom this past week. I'm guessing you haven't read it. You didn't read the Obama presidential thing, have you?
No, I have not.
All right, I need to get you to check that out. It's interesting. The story itself, I kind of did meh, but the difference that Boom did that I thought was really cool is that it had like little pieces of history nuggets like underneath. So it's like, this is the year that he became the editor of blah, blah, blah. And then it would go underneath and being like, you know, or someone was like, Barack Obama became senator and he joined the Black Caucus. And then there underneath was like, only senators from Illinois, the only senator, Black senators have all, or all the Black senators have been from Illinois. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting stat. I didn't know. So that's kind of like...
Really? What's that? Warner was from Virginia. Maybe he was just the governor.
Who?
The other Warner. The
Black Caucus?
No,
you mean...
I thought he was...
No,
the...
You mean...
But it was the Senate.
No, the other Warner was white. Was married to...
The other... No, that's what I'm saying. The other. There's another one. From like the early 90s.
No.
I'll look it up. I'll look it up.
I know who you're talking about. It was the mayor of Richmond. God, what's his name? I live in Virginia. I should know this. I know who you're talking about.
But he wasn't a senator, I guess?
No. I don't think he was. He was governor, and then he was mayor.
Governor. Okay. Never mind. Okay, but I get the idea. They've got little historic tidbits that are more knowledgeable than I am.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, I was like, all right, this was kind of cool. And I kind of walked away knowing a bit more. And I'm like, these are stats I probably should have known, or little nuggets of info that I should have known and I didn't. So actually, I have to throw in some props for that.
Yeah.
To get your take. And then, actually, let's see. So I might as well go over. So for IDW Bionic Man, I'm a sucker for Kevin Smith's relaunch.
Is it like based on the TV series, basically?
It's updated TV series. It's similar, but it's more it's set in modern times. And it's cool. Like, there's something about it that I really dig. Kevin Smith relaunched Green Hornet, and I thought the movie was horrible, but Kevin Smith's series has been awesome. IDW's got Ghostbusters, which is out. I think the first two issues have been entertaining. Let's see what else. And there's just tons of stuff coming out. I mean, I've got Severed, which is Scott Snyder's horror series from Image, is out next week. Skull Kickers Volume 2, we had Jim Zub on last week.
That's yeah, that was really great.
But yeah, I mean, there's a long list of stuff to read. So,
yeah, I do have quite a full box when I show up at the comic book store. Even so, I still feel like a certain amount of it is my ongoing optimism that hopefully some things will get better. But but thank you for the suggestions from some of those other publishers. I should definitely check their work out more often than I do.
Yes. So. I mean, there's a lot of good. There's something for everyone, basically, every single week. So, I guess if we've got nothing else, is that it for the week?
Think so.
All right, cool. Well, I guess everyone can join us next week. And yeah, that's it. As always,
take care, everybody. We'll see you then.
Yeah, and everyone, thanks for listening. Go check us out every day at graphicpolicy.com.
Good night.